Hi, welcome everybody. I wanted to say a few logistical things first off. One is that this call is being recorded, so if you speak, then you're agreeing to being recorded. We make this available archived. I also wanted to say that we're offering this forum solely for purposes of discussion and analysis, and we're explicitly not offering any legal or illegal advice. And I also wanted to ask if you would fill out the evaluation form at the end of this by email. You'll get a request to fill it out, and it really helps us to hear from you. We heard last time that a lot of you enjoyed the vision, and as a result, we're going to have a vision again at the end of this call. So thanks for that, and please let us know what works and what doesn't for you. So I also want to explain how the technology works. We ask that you use the chat window to make comments with each other and to share resources. And that if you want to submit a question to our guest, Cal, or to one of us today, then you use the Q&A. And if you have any kind of technical issue, please write to events@thrivemovement.com. And our beloved Mitch will be available there to help you. And one thing is, if you have an issue and it gets resolved, if you could write a quick note back and say it got resolved, that's really helpful too, because at the end, when we try to figure out how to get this to work ever better, it helps us to know when we've been successful in solving something. So the process for participating is that Goa, our host, will make you a panelist. And then it's best if you exit full screen at that time, and there will be a little green icon next to your name, a camera icon, and you click that because it's really fun if we can see you all via video. And then you will be unmuted, and be sure that the camera, your camera's up and running ahead of time. That helps. And we ask that you please be succinct with 1 minute for questions and 2 minutes for your comments, because there are hundreds of you who want to participate. And so we really need to just kind of move through it. I also wanted to be clear about our intention for this gathering. It's truly, we are sharing our process of discovery. It's not a seminar. We're not downloading answers. We're really sharing a real-time think tank where we can all learn and unlearn together. And, you know, with Thrive, we had fact checkers for years, and we're confident of every little thing that we said. That's not what this is. We're really in it together, and the fun of that. In terms of our content today, I really don't know if the United States is a corporation or not. We put out a blog. We got fantastic feedback. Some was very compelling evidence that disproves some of the most commonly cited evidence, stuff that we even cited as evidence in our timeline. And we have, so we're in the thick of it. You know, we're trying to figure it out, but, and we've revised the blog. Foster will talk about that, and there's going to be a link in the chat window to that. I know that, you know, a lack of evidence doesn't mean something isn't true. It does mean that we're left to speculate, which is really what I'm doing here. And I don't know why it's working, but I know that Cal is on to something that is real, and that is, it just holds tremendous promise for us all making quantum leaps ahead in our work for justice and healing on this planet. And when I met Cal a few weeks ago, I was ecstatic. I felt so hopeful and excited, and just immediately wanted to share that with our network. So that as soon as we talked to him, we said, let's just make this thing happen and open it up, and we can all be in this process of discovery together. So that's what we're going to do. Foster will say a few words for context and to introduce Cal. I think we'll have a poll, and then Cal will speak for half an hour, which is going to be a major feat to get this bounty of knowledge and experience kind of summarized in a half an hour. But we'll do that so that we can spend the next hour and a half really engaged in Q&A with you. We have a lot of interesting folks on the call, and look forward to hearing hearing from you. So please keep it succinct when you do participate. And I'm really excited. And so here's to you, Foster, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. And hello, everyone. I get so excited on these Saturdays. This is really one of my favorite times of the week or of the month, is when we get to actually spend some extended time with our network in interaction, because these are the topics that we are most passionate about. Our network of the people we're most excited to talk about, and particularly on this topic. As Kimberly said, we are in the thick of a think tank, and we want to learn from you. We are not attached to some particular opinion or looking good or being or seeming right. We're interested in finding the truth, and that's what this is about today. And as Kimberly mentioned also, that you know, we put up an extensive blog, and throughout it, we invited people to help us find the truth about the U.S. or Canada or Australia, New Zealand, other countries as corporations, because it's really an important issue for our strategizing our own liberation. So I want to give you just a couple of examples of the types of feedback that we've gotten that has been so valuable on the current blog. And what we've done is we've actually created Knowledge is Power 2.0. We've revised the blog as of last night and started putting up a number of these changes. And we were contacted by someone who introduced us to a renowned tax attorney from Alabama named Larry Beecraft, who's been in this whole field for 30 years and frankly spent a lot of time in court protecting individuals who had bravely gone in to defend themselves on the basis of the Uniform Commercial Codes, or the U.S. is a corporation and doesn't have jurisdiction over us, or whatever, some of the things we mentioned in our blog, and ended up just having that dismissed as frivolous or even fined for it and ended up in jail. So this is very serious stuff. It's not something to be done lightly. And our guest today has spent years studying this and learning how to apply it. So I'll introduce him in a minute, but let me give you a couple of examples of what we learned, specifically in this case from the attorney Larry Beecraft. He pointed out to us that the 1993 address to Congress that we had quoted from Representative Larry Traficant, which basically said the U.S. is a corporation and is bankrupt, and went into copious details claiming that there's no argument that this is the truth. Turns out that that's a fake. And Larry Beecraft knew Traficant personally, talked to him specifically on many occasions before he died a few years ago. And what Traficant did say was that, "Mr. Speaker, we're here now in Chapter 11. Members of Congress are official trustees presiding over the greatest reorganization of any bankrupt entity in world history, the U.S. government. We're setting forth, hopefully, a blueprint for our future. There are some who say it is a coroner's report that will lead to our demise." So we don't know for sure how specifically accurate he was being, or whether he was being metaphorical about the bankruptcy, but it's acknowledged that the rest of that speech was actually false. So we have eliminated that and just left the actual excerpt from the congressional record. Then Beecraft also pointed out to us that an oft-quoted section of the United States Code, Section 3001, which says that the first definition of the United States is, quote, "a federal corporation," unquote, does not in fact mean that the United States is a corporation. It's understandable how this would be a little misleading potentially. But what it actually does supposedly refer to is that within that document, which describes many corporations made by the United States government, that when it refers to United States in that document, it's referring to a corporation made by the United States. So there are several others that we have crossed out and pointed out in our revised blog, but this is the type of getting to the truth of the matter with evidence that's critical. Kimberly mentioned that a lack of evidence doesn't mean that a claim isn't true, but it means that it's just a claim. It's not a fact until we can produce evidence for it. And it doesn't mean we shouldn't be strategizing based on what we believe to be true from compelling circumstantial evidence, but it means we need to be very careful. So something is working. And Larry Beecraft has also sent us a large list of some of these people who failed to defend themselves and ended up in jail. So we want to really explore today how to see what we think is going on, what we know is going on, and how to strategize very effectively. So I wanted to make a few other comments about our perspective on authority. But before we do that, what I'd like to do is use the WebEx technology that we're on right now to have everyone participate in a poll so we can get a sense of what the perspectives are that are represented on the call today in relation to the notion of the main question that we keep coming back to in this area, which is, by what authority does anyone claim to rule over us? So, Goa, if you could put up the poll and describe to people how to participate, then I'll read the poll.
Sure. So if the poll didn't automatically show up on your screen, first you want to exit the full screen from the button at the top right. And if you're on a Mac, there's going to be a list of icons at the bottom right. If you're at a PC, it's going to be at the top right, and you're looking for an icon that has looks like a bar graph. That's the polling window panel. So just click on that, and you should be able to see the poll at that point.
Okay, so on this poll, the question is, what do you believe is the proper justification for some to rule over others? First option is the federal constitution of a republic. Second one is a state constitution. Third one is the majority rule of a democracy. The fourth one is the decree of a deity. And the last one is, there is no proper justification for any to rule over others who are doing no harm.
So Foster, it looked like we didn't give people enough time and there weren't many respondents. So I'm going to close the poll and open it up again, if that's okay.
Okay.
Okay. Oops. I'm having a little trouble. Hold on a second. Well, it doesn't seem to be cooperating with me at all. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
So you must have it in front of you now. So at least you have the opportunity while we're waiting for the technology to actually create the vote to consider which one is your choice.
Yeah. Why don't you go ahead, Foster, while we wait? Because that could be any amount of time. Foster, it's not happening.
Okay. So anyone who's been around the Thrive Network for a while knows that this is a core issue for us. So when we're dealing with our Solutions Hub network, who constitutes over 1,030 groups in about 100 countries around the world that are taking on over 200 issues, it's very obviously complex. There's so many ways in which we are being violated. But it's been really encouraging to us to see that there are common denominators to all of these hundreds of issues. So whether we're looking at GMOs in Maui or elsewhere in the world, or chemtrails all over the world, or mandatory vaccines, and the issues go on and on, banking schemes, whatever. If they're doing harm, if they're violating the personal property of another, then there is a core issue to all of these multiple issues, which is, by what authority do they rule over us? So our notion, why we're so excited about this today, is that in a system where they're claiming power over us, strategy is to understand their system well enough that we can trap the perpetrators in their own system of transgression so that their own aggression then comes back onto them until they stop. Now, many of you might know that I spent 15 years training and teaching in various martial arts, but especially the martial art, the nonviolent martial art of Aikido. And that was what we did in Aikido, either disengage from an attack or, if it's a persistent attack, to actually neutralize the violence without having to injure the person by turning their aggression back on themselves until they stop and ultimately, hopefully, make retribution. So Goa, did you get access to this yet, or shall I keep going?
Yes, we can open up the
poll. Okay, go ahead and open up the poll, because I would really, before continuing, I'd love to get people a chance to vote.
Okay, there you go.
Vote pass.
So just check on one of those boxes and then press submit down in the lower right-hand corner. Go on. My poll it has frozen the remaining time. There you go. It's working. Okay, great. All right. Well, we've got a spread of responses. The only one that has zero is the state constitution. So that's great. That, you know, makes for a powerful discussion. And last thing I want to suggest before introducing Cal is that, from our perspective at Thrive, no one should have the right to rule over someone else who has not explicitly given them that right. So if you're creating a corporation, I mean, creating either a, you know, an organization or a club or a self-chosen rather than government issued corporation, then you can choose to have people in roles of authority, like in a business, but you're still free to leave that organization and ultimately not have your life ruled by that entity. So what we're suggesting is that that there actually is no proper justification for any human being to rule over another one against their will, unless, of course, they're protecting themselves in a situation of genuine self-defense. So whether someone claims that they know the word of God, or whether an institution has been around for a long time, or whether it's a federal government or a state government or a dictatorship or whatever, what we're suggesting is that none of this is fundamentally valid. I think we all have a really common tendency, particularly having grown up as children dependent on parents, to want to fall back onto something, that it's written in the sky or that it's written on a piece of paper or something, an ultimate justification for your freedom. And I want to suggest that it's not that clear cut. The reality is that we all come in as independent beings on this planet with no innate difference in our right to freedom, or right to our own lives. But then people start claiming it, from the pharaohs to the kings to the dictators to the politicians to the corporate leaders. They start trying to claim power over us. And if we can find how they claim what they're claiming, it makes it a lot easier to not be subject to that claim. Now, we pay taxes right now because we find that we're much more effective outdoing what we're doing than being in jail. But that's because we're coerced, like everyone else is. Now, some people agree to pay taxes, and that's fine. But most people are coerced to pay taxes at the point of a gun. So we really want to explore this issue. And there's no one that we have found who would be better to initiate this than our guest today. So let me say a little something about Cal Washington. Cal in our experience, is fundamentally a free man. Not just because he's read something, but because he's actually living his life from the spiritual awareness, from the practical awareness that he is a free, independent spiritual being. We find him personally to be a man of clarity, of integrity, of obvious perseverance, as you will learn, and a deep spiritual presence. And Cal is someone who has been studying and applying these principles of true freedom in his own life and helping others, specifically recently in terms of helping the smart meter movement to apply this practical knowledge to liberate people from being harmed and being violated by mandatory installation of harmful technology. And Cal is out there leading a normal life like the rest of us, and he makes ends meet and hones his craft as a carpenter. I won't make the obvious analogy to other freedom-loving activists who made their livings as a carpenter. But without further ado, we just want to welcome in with great excitement to share him with you, Cal Washington.
Do I have to do anything? Hello.
Hi, Cal. Welcome.
Thank you.
So we've asked Cal to take about half an hour to hit the highlights. And he's got some slides that he'll show, and he'll be available for that in following hour and a half to answer questions. So, Cal, we invite you to start in wherever you think is most important.
Okay. Well, thanks for having me on this webinar. And I hope everybody will get something out of this. A lot of things will go fast, and some things will come out of my mouth that you may not understand at first, but if you think about them or able to watch it a couple of times, information will start to gel for you. As Kimberly said, it's going to be hard to find proof of any sort of corporate thing. They're not going to leave a trail. They're obviously trying to cover it. But if you think in terms of a puzzle with a lot of pieces, but you don't have the actual picture, like the box that it comes in, so you don't know what it looks like. If you start to put these pieces together, even though some pieces have been taken out purposely, if you get enough of them together, you'll start to see a picture and it starts to make sense. And so that's sort of what happened in my life, just because I ended up being dragged into a court system, into a court case, and then it turned into multiple cases. I had to study, I had to learn in real time and try and make a living and everything else. So what happened to me I ended up in a divorce and ended up in a court situation and had to learn. So I went through a couple of different teachers and until I came to what I understand now as commerce. And I learned quite a bit about that. That's when my court cases started to change. And I had, we were trying things and I got different results. By trying different things. And some of the results are the first time I put a bond in on a case, the judge ran out of the room as I walked in, as they called my case. And, the courtroom was all in shock and the sheriffs and everybody's looking at each other like, what happened? Because they didn't know. And the judge was hightailing it out the side door. And if I'd known what I know now, I could have done something with it. But again, we were just plowing through this and trying to wade through this injustice system. Another thing that ended up happening, because as I started to learn more about what was going on, I started to read some of the acts, because I had never really done any kind of, never been in trouble really before and never had to read anything. So I started reading them and rereading them and reading the acts backwards and all kinds of things. And started to see patterns and cover-ups and discrepancies among the acts. So I started bringing that up, thinking that was going to be my remedy by showing where their acts had fallen down, but it seemed to fall on deaf ears, and you just get a judgment against you anyway. So that there is obviously something else going on behind the scenes, because they're not even paying attention to their own stuff. So once I started doing commerce, it was a game changer. That's the only way I can say it. And I had a lot of people step down. A lot of government officials left their positions. And not that we were trying to do that, or I was trying to do that. It just, that's just what happened when you did a certain action and there was a reaction. So after you do this a few times, at first you think it's just a coincidence, but after it becomes 20 or 30 times where somebody leaves the same day they get mail or within a week or something, it's no longer a coincidence that there is an actual cause and effect. Through all that, I did learn, as I was learning commerce and seeing how things were working, I had an extensive Bible knowledge. And I know there's a bunch of reactions right now as I said that word. But the fact is, there was seemed to be a correlation between some of the stories in the Bible and what I was experiencing here and now. And I started using some of the tactics that are in there, that are, they're sort of hidden in there, but they're in there. And that seemed to be really drive the nail through and get a wedge into this thing, where I'm at the point where they really don't want to bring me into court anymore. And if I do show up there, the judges get fidgety. I've seen lots of judges not come in the room. I've seen some judges recuse themselves. I was helping one fella who was, he was in prison. And so I went to his court case and the judge dropped the case right away. She recused herself. The next judge came in, he was very angry. And then on the next appearance, the accused was sitting in the penalty box, I call it. And, he kept looking back at me to know what to answer, because they were asking him questions. And then I would go, yes, no, so the judge goes, you keep looking back at that man there. And, would it be helpful if you could have a meeting with him? And of course the court went just nuts and you can't do that. You know, he's incarcerated. And the judge says, yes, I can do whatever I want. So they set up a meeting. He actually closed the courtroom down, made the sheriff stand in the front, and had everybody leave the room so that I could actually have a conversation. And he said, take however long you want. So these are the types of things that I was experiencing, where before, in my cases, when I first started out, it wasn't anything like that. It was just, I was getting railroaded. They wouldn't listen. They would cut you off if you tried to say something, all those types of things. So I started to figure out that this is, this commerce is what's really happening. Plus with that, I did run across a few things. I was led to, I was with some people and we were talking about Section 2 of the British North America Act. And for those that aren't Canadian, that is our beginning act of the country here. And so Section 2 was repealed, and it was about provisions of the act would pass to the successors and heirs of who signed the act, which was Victoria. And so I went on there to check on this, and I went on the internet, and there was a little hyperlink where Section 2 was, so you could see what it did say, because it said repealed. But up above, there was a number one hyperlink, and so I hit that one, and it was the enacting clause. So I looked at that, and I saw that the enacting clause had been repealed. So the enacting clause is the words from whoever is giving the authority for the act. It is the words that give it that authority. So it would have been Victoria at the time. And she says, by my authority under blah, blah, and I'll show it to you in a minute. I enact the following act. And then that starts the enactment of Canada. So 26 years later, she repeals those words. So the conjecture was, well, did the act fall? Because if you remove the authority words, then does the act apply? And so there's a lot of debate about that. And I just sort of started acting as if it was. So that was my premise of it. So with that, I ended up in a court in a courtroom. It was still my case, and the judge started yelling at me as I crossed the bar. And normally they would call my cases at the very end when the courtroom was empty because they didn't want to have anybody hear what I had to say. And but he called me up early because he was going to put me in my place. And he started talking about the British North America Act. And he went on and on and on. And he was trying to show how smart he was and how ridiculous I was. And so I was going to use that enacting clause thing. So I stopped concentrating on what he was saying and just waited for him to stop talking. And he just kept going and going and going. And he went, you know, Section 91 and Section 90, and I knew a little bit about those, and I, you know, because I had read the thing a few times, but I'm not an expert on the British North America Act like he was. And so when he stopped talking, I said, Queen Victoria unenacted that act in 1893. And he went dead silence. No rebuttal, nothing. So I went, okay, you're an expert and you got no rebuttal for this? And I said the words, she unenacted the British North America Act. So he went dead silent and basically adjourned the case, and I never saw him again. And I guess from what I understood after the case, some people kept come to watch it, and they said, this is the judge they bring in to knock down any of the sovereign type people. I didn't know that at the time, right? He's just another judge to me, right? And so he wasn't successful. He didn't know what to say. He didn't even bring up the fact in 1982 that Trudeau had changed the name of the act to the Constitution Act of 1867 and tried to reinstate it, which you can't do. It would be treasonous to do so. So he didn't even bring that up. He didn't know what I knew, but he knew not to try that, right? Because he didn't know what the next thing out of my mouth. So he just left it at that, and I had no rebuttal from that question. Is the act unenacted? And everybody just avoids it. They get scared. They leave office just because of that. So with that in mind, I believe that the country did dissolve as it was from the British North America Act. The problem being is, I got a letter from our attorney general here where I live, and long story short, my brother ended up getting beat up by a SWAT team, thinking they thought he was me. So so I wrote to the attorney general about this, and of course his letter was that I'm the problem, and that I'm not obeying the laws of British Columbia, and that I'm not obeying court orders. And the courts have authority. He said the words, the courts have authority to make orders and the police have the authority to carry them out. So I, just like Kimberly, I asked the most obvious base question, where did the courts get the authority to, because everybody just assumes if somebody like that says that, of course they have authority, but where does it come from? And I got silence. He wouldn't write back. So he got an underling to write back. It was probably about a month or two later. And the answer was, I'm answering on behalf of the Honorable Wally Opal. The answer was, the courts get the authority from the Constitution Act. So if the Constitution Act isn't valid, then the courts don't have authority. So I started acting like that. And of course, people just want to try and get out of your way. So so what I surmised is that before Canada, there was a corporation here that was running it. And here's the key that I want you to understand. This was not hidden. And it's a big glitch in the Babylonian system, as the Bible calls it. Because they ran a country, they ran a so-called country here for over 200 years, and it was a for-profit corporation. So here's where I will show you. I'll show you the enacting clause. So we'll do a share screen here.
While he's doing that, I just want to make sure that everybody understands that Cal is lives in the area called Canada, but he's also been doing this work helping people in the United States. And it encourages us all to find out whatever our particular so-called jurisdiction is, what's the illusion of authority claiming to rule us there? So the principles are going to end up applying anywhere, even though the history may be a little different.
So, and what I want to try and show you here is that the so-called countries, the United States and Canada, some events happen, that are simultaneous. So there's obviously some other entity that is above both countries that is implementing something that has to go through both countries at the same time. So what I want to show you is Canada was a big glitch. They've left a big gaping hole in their disguise because they did run a full-on corporation here for 200 years.
That's the Hudson Bay Corporation,
yeah.
Right? So people can also have the information to follow up on this.
I'll show you that document too. We're just having trouble getting the screen to show.
It started full screen, then it went to the slide view.
Well, I'll continue on here anyway, so.
Goa, do you have copies?
I do.
Maybe you can get them going while Cal's talking.
Sure. Is that all right, Cal? I'm going to go ahead and grab it. You can just tell me which slide to go to.
That's a good one right there. So this is the... this is the enacting clause. This is an act that repealed the enacting clause from the British North America Act of 1867. And this is what it said. So you can see down there, where the section one is, the enacting clause was repealed by the Statute Law Revisions Act 1893, Victoria. And it read as follows. So this is what it used to say in the British North America Act. Be it therefore enacted and declared by the Queen's Most Excellent Majesty, by and with the advice and consent of the Lords Spiritual and Temporal and Commons in this present Parliament assembled and by the authority of the same as follows. And then the act would start. So section one of the act would start after that. So that got repealed. So in 1982, we had a prime minister here called Pierre Trudeau, and he said, we have a constitutional problem. And the problem was, we don't have a constitution, because this is what happened. So they tried to fix it by changing the name to the Constitution Act, as you can see up there. But the original act was called the British North America Act. So they changed the name in order to try and revive it and portray it as something else. There was no Constitution Act passed in 1867. The British North America Act was passed in 1867. So this is a lie right there to try and make you seem like everything's okay. So the only thing that happened, go to the next slide, in 82 to give any kind of authority was Queen Elizabeth came and... she signed this proclamation in Ottawa. And it basically says that, and you can look this up, basically says that the events that happened, and that the Constitution Act of 1867, which is not true, and the Charter of Rights is now going to be called the Constitution. So govern yourselves accordingly. And those words, if you just think about it, she's telling you, you can govern yourself accordingly. So you have to agree to this thing, right? So next slide. So this is the charter, and you can find this online as well. This is the actual charter of the corporation that ran for 200 years. It's a for-profit corporation. It was signed, again, there's an acting clause at the top, by Charles II, and the first governor of the Hudson Bay Company, as it's commonly called, was Prince Rupert. And they had all the land in and around the Hudson Bay, down past where the United States border is now, where Michigan, et cetera, is. It was quite a large chunk of land all the way around the bay. And they had full monopoly of all the trade going in and out of the Hudson Bay, any rivers, streams, et cetera. And you can read this. So this is the beginning of it. Now, Prince Rupert, I want you to understand, it was the cousin of the king. He had been exiled. And I don't know for what. I didn't research that far enough. It wasn't readily available what he did, but he did get exiled. And the best that he could come up with for whatever he did was exile, with the connection that he has as a cousin of the king. So what he was up until this point in time was a privateer. And a privateer is a licensed pirate. So he was on the open seas stealing goods off of other boats and doing whatever other atrocities. And this is the first governor of what we now know as Canada. So this is the incarnation of how Canada started. A pirate and a slave trader was the first guy to run things. And so you can tell just by that how things are going to go. So they had this thing. I'll go to the next slide. They had this charter in perpetual succession, meaning it didn't have an ending to it. And supposedly, 200 years later, whoever was the heir of this, the group gave it up. I don't know why you would give up a monopoly when you have a document like this signed by a king, why you would ever give that up, but apparently that's what happened. So I'm thinking there was something else going on because it just doesn't make any sense.
So Cal, I want to be sure that we get to the application today. I know it's really hard with so much history that is involved, and we can get back to that if people's questions go there. But I think the whole, how does this actually give us power today to intervene in this, in the false authority that's being claimed to cause so much damage?
Okay. Well, once you understand that it is a corporation, then you just have to treat it as such. And there's no magic to it. Once you see things for as they are, like in The Wizard of Oz, once you pull back the curtain and you see the little guy behind there, it becomes evident how to deal with that little guy rather than the big monster on the screen, right? So once you see things as they really are, then you can start to deal with it. So if Walmart came to you and said, we're taking you to court because we noticed you haven't shopped here in the last 2 weeks. And we have this piece of paper that says you have to shop here. it would sound ridiculous to you, and you would take action, appropriate action. Well, the country known as Canada or any of the provinces are just that. They've created these things called acts, saying you have to buy this, and you have to get this license, and you have to pay this, and you have to do that. But it's all by agreement. They don't tell you it's by agreement, but it is by agreement. So we think that they have some kind of authority, and that's the deception that's going on. So once you see past that and you start to treat it as a corporation that doesn't have that kind of authority, then that's what changes. So in commerce, everything is done by contract, by agreement. So if somebody wants to sell me something, I have to agree that I want the thing in the first place, and how much do I want to pay for it? So that's sort of the basis, just very simply, of how to deal with this thing. Another thing that I was able to correlate with what I knew from the Bible was in Revelation 18, where it explains this worldwide system, and it calls it Babylon. So once I started to see what was going on in the court system and the country as I thought it was, I started to go, no, this is actually what the Bible had talked about. So there was two things that we were told to do to deal with this thing. One was get out. The next thing was to take the cup that they've been giving you, fill it double, which is a numeric term, and hand it back, which is like Aikido. So as Foster said, so that's what I started to do. I just started to follow that simple method. And that's when the effects started happening. So I would take anything that they were sending me or trying to make me do, I would take that as an offer. And so simply I would go, I see your offer. If you can prove to me where your authority comes from to make me do this, then I'm willing to do it. If you don't, then I'm going to charge you X amount of dollars. So it's just a negotiation, just like when you sell your house. There are you list your house, which is the offer, and then a potential buyer comes in and they put a counter offer in based on some new subjects to the terms that you have agreed on. Then you go back and forth until you reach an agreement, and then there's two people sign, and then there's the money exchanges and the product changes. So it's the same thing with these corporate governments. They are all there. Everything they do is commercially based, and you just have to treat it that way. And that's when you get the results.
So, Cal, can you describe the bond that you put on the judge that really exemplifies this so well?
The bond. Okay. The bond is.
The one about the additional fifth part.
Yeah, well, I'm just going to brush on this, but there is a trust that's set up for everybody based on your birth certificate. And a lot of people go out looking for this trust, trying to get their so-called money out of it. And I don't do that. I just use the trust in order to issue bonds to give back to the system. And that's the only thing I will do. If money comes to me, that's fine, but I'm not out there to do that. I'm just trying to obey that simple command as take the cup, fill it double, give it back. So the bond is that action. So I take the trust and I write a bond against it and I put it into the system. So I would buy the case. So each case, because it's commercial in essence, and somebody could get harmed, they have to be indemnified. So the lawyers indemnify it through their bar number. So if you put a bond in that's bigger than anybody else that's bonded the case, all of a sudden you have basically bought the case, and you can make orders based on that. And if a judge is going to act unjustly, you write that in the bond that it's gonna cost him. So when the judge reads that, they basically want to get out of the room. They don't want to deal with it. Now, I have to tell you, I've had judges with the bond in their hand and going, this is all bunk and, you know, all those words, but their body language, they're actually physically shaking and they sweat. And so it's like, yeah, I hear what you're saying, but your body's telling me something else. You're definitely afraid of this, right? So there was a lot of that in my trial and error with all these things that I tried, right? I ended up in jail for 60 days at one point. That's how long it took them to get me through a trial, and they wouldn't let me out on bail. And I had a couple of friends out who actually wrote what's called a promissory note to pay for whatever it is that that is the basis of the case, because it has to be commercial in essence, because everything they do is about money. It's been like that since the Hudson Bay Company. So they put in a large promissory note, and on my last day, they found me guilty, and she gave me a $1,250 fine for driving out insurance. And she gave me, I did 60 days in jail. She gave me one day in jail and 59 days credit. Now, credit is a commercial term. So I didn't let that slide by. I said, I want to talk about the credit. And she goes, okay. And so I said, you just offered me 59 days credit, and a promissory note was put in for my incarceration. And she goes, what? I said, a promissory note was put in for my incarceration. She goes, pardon me? And so I started again. She goes, okay, we're done with that. Okay, so where was the promissory note put? And I said, it was put with the clerk of the court. She goes, okay. So I said, I want the 59 days credit that you just offered me has to reflect the promissory note, because that's the exchange that you're trying to give me. You're trying to give me my days back, because they were bought. So it has to equal what was paid. So she goes, okay, how much was the promissory note? And I said, $300 million. And there was a bunch of people that were watching the case, and they all gasped in the back. They were, you know, they could hear this. And she was just like in shock, almost swallowed her tongue, and basically put the gavel down and left the room. So then once I got out, it was the collecting of this thing. And so we learned some more about how to collect. And that's where I learned this process that we're using in the smart meter thing. So I basically have taken that process and I've applied it here, because that when I started to go after the province and then actually the federal government for this thing, I had a lot of people step down, including what we call the clerk of the Privy Council. And he was a very powerful man. It would be similar to Donald Rumsfeld stepping down. It's that kind of guy. He had been the CEO of the Bank of Canada. That was his previous job before coming onto the Privy Council. So this was a very learned man, very powerful man, had a lot of knowledge about commercial instruments and banking. You don't run the Bank of Canada, a central bank, and not be an insider. Like, he would have been rubbing hands with the very top people that are controlling the world. He was in that echelon, and he stepped down on the very day that he got mail from me. And it was written in our national magazine and our national paper, and nobody could understand why this man had stepped down, because I think the quote was it had to be something very vicious to make a man as savvy as Kevin Lynch to step down with no notice. And he stepped down with no notice because he had done a press conference in the morning and didn't announce any kind of retirement or anything like that, and by noon he grabbed his three pencils off his desk and out the door he went. So they couldn't figure out what had compelled this to happen. And this is a story that happened to me over and over and over. So this stuff is powerful. It does work. It doesn't work on everybody, because not everybody's as clued in as some of the very top people. So it's usually the top people that leave, and the underlings think this is all bunk. So you're going to get some mixed reviews on it, for lack of a better word, but it does work. So it's starting to filter down.
I'm going to interrupt for 1 second and make sure people get some of the basic overarching things that are happening here, because this notion of commerce is significant because it basically means that everything that goes on in our interactions in a court system has to do with money and offers and counteroffers. And so something that we're used to experiencing as a fait accompli, here's a sentence, we have to relearn and understand that that's actually an offer. And we have the ability, and I would say the responsibility, to make a counteroffer. And that when we do that, we're intervening in the in sort of the basic underlying assumption that they've made, which is that there's a tacit agreement. If we don't make a counter offer, then it is built into the system that we are agreeing to and accepting the offer that's made. So this involves obviously a lot of understanding, you know, and Cal, you have done such a brilliant job of being able to read through and, you know, decipher things that otherwise just looks like language. We don't know what to do with that. And that is a tremendous gift. And I think the other part that goes with this, as we apply it to smart meters and GMOs and the various violations that are going on, you know, to our us and to our environment, is to recognize that we have some serious unlearning to do along with the learning. And that unlearning has to do with our relationship to authority, because, you know, when you get, and especially with what you just said, that some people know what they're doing within the system and some don't, right? So not every police officer, not every judge understands that they are part of a commerce system where, in fact, they don't have the authority that they are acting like they are. And I know for me, I've had to practice seeing them as Walmart employees and so that I can shift the training that has happened for so long for me to go along with or be intimidated by. And in addition to that, they have power to make things happen still. Like you ended up in jail, you know, like that kind of stuff can happen. And so we have to know that while it's falsely claimed, it's deeply imbued in the systems around us. And so what we're really here to do is to figure out how to tease this out and navigate to where we can use the core understanding, figure out how it applies to the issue that we're applying it to, keep ourselves safe in the process, and always give an opportunity for right action to be taken. And that's one of the things about how you've proceeded in this work with the smart meters and stuff, where in getting people who are, you know, what's happening is they're making decisions in their positions of government and corporate power, their positions there, they're making decisions that are causing harm. And so when we're saying those decisions that you're making, you have to be accountable for. And that's the bottom line. And I think that that's the part that they're that's getting the resignations. Now, the other part is, okay, so once they resign, now what? You know, can they participate in helping us understand this better? And what are the next moves for their right action? So I know, you know, we want to open this up to get to see where the folks on the call most want to address this and take it to the causes and issues that they're working on, how this can apply in America as well as Canada. And so maybe if there's something else to say that's critical for the understanding that you haven't said or that I haven't tried to wrap around in the generalizations, say that, and then let's open it up into the discussion so that we can see what it is folks most want to be understanding about this today.
And then Kimberly, I recommend that when we open it up, we bring in one of the members of our network is Josh Del Sol, who's been really spearheading the smart meter, a lot of the smart meter movement, and made the Take Back Your Power movie. And he's been, and his team have been working with Cal to empower people who don't want to have smart meters affecting their health and their home. And so I think that hearing a little bit from him, particularly this notice of liability that they've just created recently, I think will help to answer, because a lot of the questions we're getting online are about, okay, well, how do I actually go about doing this? And that can give an example in the United States of as well as Canada, of how people are starting to use these principles. So did you want to say something else, Cal, to kind of wrap up the intro? We'll go back to you again and again during the Q&A.
Okay. Just one thing, and that's the HJR 192. There was a coinciding document that happened in Canada. So I want you to understand that when they took the money off of gold, they did it in both countries at the same time, within months of each other. Canada was actually a couple of months earlier in April, and the other one was in June. So there is another a controlling entity that's above it. And if Canada is a corporation, it makes sense that the United States is too, even though you can't find documentation like Canada. They left a big gaping hole, so it's very easy to see here. But the United States is a little more covert in what's actually happened. So I just wanted to bring that up.
Yeah, for the viewers, that HJR 192 was the Emergency Banking Act from 1933 that by which Roosevelt confiscated everybody's gold. And what Cal's saying is that happened within 2 months also in Canada. Probably not a coincidence.
No. So they ran the corporation here, the Hudson Bay Company, for 200 years. But the problem was everybody knew it was a corporation and they started shooting at them. And I've even seen some of their forts in Ontario. And so this whole idea of a country and people voting is just another way to pacify the people to think that there's a country running on. And then they just went right back to the whole Hudson Bay thing. And it runs very similar, if you read that charter, to what we are under today. It's like it's identical. You know, you have to get licensing, et cetera.
It's very, very helpful.
Yeah.
So okay, thanks. Can we bring Josh in?
Yes, and Preston, I know, is saying, can we speak to examples of application in the United States? A lot of people are wanting to see this. So, Josh, you can speak to this, and then I'll get to some of these other questions.
Hi, can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, great. Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you. Cal is in his work and his research, what he's uncovered and the path that he's walked has really intrigued me, because as producer and director of Take Back Your Power, I started to wonder at what level will we have to go, how deep will we have to go to get solutions? You know, this movement to stop smart meters, even though they're violating the Fourth Amendment, they're creating risks of fire and hacking, they're basically extorting the people, and they're breaking their own rules. People are bringing this information and appealing and complaining and, you know, trying to hold their utilities and their public officials accountable, but it hasn't been happening. So what I've been really inspired by Cal's work, and we've actually I've connected him with three seed groups in three different regions that have begun to use a process which is called the Notice of Liability. And what it does is essentially it's within the Notice of Liability is what's called, this is what you were mentioning before, Kimberly, a conditional acceptance.
And so, excuse me for interrupting, but Goa, can you bring up the Notice of Liability while Josh is describing it?
You bet.
If you could, Goa, let's just leave it on the first page for now, because we're not quite ready to release it.
Okay.
So what this is, we're, again, assuming that this is all commerce. We're just, you know, it looks like it is. It looks like it's for profit. It looks like, you know, basic fundamental rights are not being upheld. So under that assumption, until somebody shows us otherwise, We are doing a conditional acceptance for their offer to cause us harm with harmful technology, with a so-called smart meter. That offer of installation, whether it's been whether we've been notified or whether they've just gone ahead and installed it, we're treating that as like an offer that someone would make to buy a house. Us having the rights, having the say, and having free will to create contract and agreement in contract law, common law, uniform commercial code, all these jurisdictions where we've forgotten that we have the ability to create or rescind or change the terms of agreement. We're now remembering that, we're waking up, and through this process, we can actually do this conditional acceptance that says, I accept your claim that you want to install this technology upon my house and spy on me and so forth and all of these harms. If you can prove that these 15 points in this affidavit that I have here are false. And an affidavit is essentially a sworn document. It's a document that you personally verify to be true, and it stands up in all court proceedings. So if they can't, if they cannot go point by point, as we require in our conditional acceptance, if they can't go point by point and tell us how those points are false, then our terms in that conditional acceptance include a daily fee schedule. Okay, so this is now creating a contract with them. It's changing the terms of the contract so that if they continue to deploy these harmful agendas, whether it's, you know, smart meters, and this can be applied to all of these other issues that everyone here is pretty much aware about and concerned about, if they continue to deploy them, then it will put them on the hook legally and contractually for the liability, for the all harm, as dictated by our combined daily fee schedules. Now, each individual that does this process in this community, which is all supported, that amount of liability adds up on a daily basis for every single one as an individual that has done this process. So we're talking about some potentially very high numbers and some very big motivation for them to reconsider their plan to essentially, colonize us in our homes, which after much research, I've come to the belief that these corporate forces want to move from an individually, individual rights based society to a collective. And I'm very much, appreciating that the work that you guys are doing, Kimberly and Foster, about that. So what we've seen in these three groups that have started just at the starting point now of implementing this process is we've seen in one area, we've seen the company, the CEO of the company that is has been installing these smart meters. The CEO of Corix in British Columbia stepped down 5 days after receiving more than 100 notices of liabilities or notices of fault. The notice of fault is the second step in this commercial process. In Seattle, we have 3 out of the 8 Seattle City Councilors have announced they're not seeking re-election. Now, again, I'm not saying that this is direct cause and direct effect, but like Cal has seen, there seems to be some coincidences that are stacking up that seem to be, pieces coming together that we can start to paint a picture that this seems to be causing effect. So 3 out of the 8 Seattle City Councilors have announced they're not seeking re-election after being defaulted by only 20 individuals here in November. And just yesterday, the CEO of Seattle City Light, the main utility in Seattle that are deploying smart meters, announced his resignation.
And you mentioned the head of the PUC in California also.
Yeah, he's being investigated at a state and federal level for crimes of essentially collusion between the PUC and the utilities, and PG&E mostly. In Ontario,
that's also mentioned that he's stepping down.
He's exactly, yeah, he's stepping down, and even the mainstream news now is reported that, in this reporter's own terms, trouble will surely follow him even though he's stepping down. This is an ongoing problem for these individuals that are beginning to be held accountable. Now, we haven't done the process specifically for Michael Peavy in California, but these other three groups in which people appear to be stepping down because they do not want to be contractually bound to this liability. Okay, there seems to be something happening. So I just wanted to offer that as a witness to, yeah, to what Cal is sharing about. And also, if I could ask Cal at some point, I would love, because one of the most powerful things to me was his experience about creating that $300 million or $360 million contract verbally with the judge and the ramifications from that. So with that, you know, I'll leave with that because there's so much more being uncovered here, yeah, and I look forward to it. So thank you.
Thanks, Josh. I really appreciate this. And what it keeps coming back to that's so exciting to me is individual human beings holding other individual human beings publicly accountable and personally liable.
Personally and as an individual and as a holder of their office.
Yes.
So, and this is also a process that can be done directly with the corporation. So it's basically we're creating the situation here together.
And that was one of the questions that we had sent in was if somebody steps down in order to avoid liability and they have caused harm, are they still going to be financially liable as an individual? So if either you or Cal can address that, I'm sure a lot of people will be wondering.
I'll definitely defer to Cal from this point forward.
Okay. Thanks, Josh.
Thank you.
Yes, the notice of liability is written in a way that it's to the man or woman and the office that they hold. So it's going to both entities because one's a fiction and one's an actual Russian blood human, yeah, being.
Great.
Yeah,
Kimberly, I have one other request while we're on this thing with the smart meters. Could you bring in Rebecca M. Campbell if she's available? She's been involved to some degree with this team also and tackling this as well as a lot of other freedom issues up in Seattle.
Unfortunately, Rebecca was not able to get into the WebEx software this morning and is only doing via phone. We can't actually bring her in that way.
Oh, too bad. Well, Rebecca, maybe you at some point you can write up a couple of paragraphs and either send it in to us and we can put it on the website at some other point or join the chat that's going on below this event on the thrivemovement.com website and put in your input because I know you've been an important part of the struggle up there.
Yeah, and I think this is – so there are a few things coming up that I just want to say right off, and then I want to call on Robert Menkmeiler. And help me if I pronounced your name incorrectly while Goa gets you up. But I wanted to say that there are many people who are aware of one part of this or another. And, you know, there isn't right now a cohered place that says, here's all the information and here's exactly where we all are. I would love to help provide whatever we can in that way. I know Anne is asking, can the slides that you have be available, Cal? And I don't know where people should be contacting you if you want that, if we should put those slides up on our site, how to proceed, but to empower people as much as possible with access to this so that we can just start familiarizing ourselves. So one, how can people contact you if you want that? And two, could we have the slides or can you have a place where people can access these slides?
Yeah, you can have the slides. Most of it's online. There was a couple slides I didn't show you, and that's about oaths. And oaths are very important in this system. But I had an 8-month battle to get those oaths. So I got all their oaths, and not all of them, but anybody that was pertinent to my case, I got them. And so you should see those too. So but you can put it up on your site, and people can.
Yeah, I think I have copies of your oaths too, Cal. And that was very powerful for me to see, particularly for Canada, where the Prime Minister is swearing his oath to serve the Queen. And then you look at the Queen's oath, and she's swearing it to serve God. And they have their particular version, of course, of what that means. And, you know, what's the document, the King James version of the Bible, which establishes the basis for that oath. So whether you believe in a particular religion or not, it's important to understand if somebody's claiming authority because of some system, it's a good idea to know what system they're using so that you can respond to them within that system as well as superseding that system.
Correct. And the Bible is very specific. So it's a contract that she has to uphold. And if you use it, you can use it against her, for lack of a better better term, because she has sworn an oath to uphold it. So it behooves you to use it. And there's a lot of disinformation about the Bible to keep people from going at it. They shun it. And that's on purpose. So don't think of the Bible as a religious document, even though it's been used like that. It's a contract, and there's a lot of stuff in there that you can learn about how this system is here. And I don't know how the Bible got here, but I got a lot of answers out of there too. So
just as the punchline of that, while we're on it, Cal, Josh had asked also for you just to complete that story of when you said the promissory note that you had put in place was $300 million. What happened after that?
Well, she, like I said, she left the room. It took them about 8 hours to release me. That was my last day there because I hadn't signed anything in jail. And apparently, if you don't sign, then you weren't really there. And you have to agree to be in jail. This is, you really got to unlearn a bunch of stuff. Like everything is by agreement. So they want you to sign in, sign out, sign when you go get in the truck to go to the court, sign if you want to see a doctor, because they monetize all of that stuff. And I can show you in the Bills of Exchange Act where your signature on a blank piece of paper is considered money. And so once you understand that, then you can start to write your own money. And that's how this those bonds and the promissory notes kind of work, because
I may be misremembering this bond, but didn't you say in a talk that I watched that when your promissory note was published publicly, it would actually showed up as $360 million. And why was that?
That's because I used the Bible out of Leviticus. It said if somebody finds something, steals something, or any other way got something from you, they have to give back the principal plus the fifth part, which is 20%. So I wrote that, used the Bible verse, and then the newspaper said the province is looking for $360 million. They're obeying this stuff.
It's no wonder she resigned, from that case at least, yeah.
Here is the circular that the province put out where they were selling the note.
Oh, God.
So we're going to put all of this, any documentation that we're referring to today, we will put on the event page in association with this event by the end of the weekend. We'll get that stuff for Monday. We'll have that all there. I know so we're going to bring up, Robert, one thing I just want to say when some of the questions are, where can we get the correct information to use? Because there was even conflicting info with Thrive. There is no place that currently has correct information that you can be sure of. We have spent months really looking into this, and I have not seen any place that has only reliable information. There are places that have part of it here and part of it there, and even then you have to do the fact checking. And as Cal said, a ton of this is trial and error at this stage, so we are not able. That's why I said this is really different from Thrive, you know, when we could offer, here's what we know, here's how it works, you know, and it's all 100% solid. All that's happening now is that we have an understanding that what we have thought of as somehow justified authority is in fact not. It seems to be based on commerce. When we treat it that way, good things happen. If you think of good as justice and empowerment of people, which I do. And that's kind of where we are with it. So as more and more people are aware, we can use the Thrive Movement Hub to keep this information coming. But one of the things that you need to understand is we're going to keep correcting it. This, you know, 2.0 version of our blog that we put out is going to end up with a 3.0 at some point as we continue to learn and go. And that's kind of part of the think tank that Thrive Together is to say we're actually in real time here together learning this stuff. So it's going to be less easy and also, you know, very significant and pioneering work. So, Robert, how about if you come on up and ask your question?
Robert, if you can, if you can see the panelists list and you see your name in there, click the icon to the right. the little camera icon. If you're in full screen mode, then get out of full screen mode with the button on the top right, and then click on that camera button next to your name.
And Sky, why don't you get ready with your camera ready and stuff to be next in line to come on?
Robert, are you with us?
Make sure you're not muted.
Well, he's unmuted.
Okay.
Maybe we should move on to Sky.
Okay, Sky.
Okay. Can't get my webcam to work.
All right, why don't you ask your question?
Okay, I've been following the Rod Claff case with Adventures into Sovereignty Group and the International Tribunal for Natural Justice. And I was wondering if all of the both of those groups had put all of their documents on the web. And I was wondering if Thrive has checked them out and found any of them to be useful.
I personally have heard of the case, but I don't know it at all. Cal, do you know that case?
I'm somewhat aware of the Rod Claff case, but I don't know of any documents that are online or anything like that.
And then,
Sky, if you can send us a link or put a link in chat, then we and others can check that out.
Okay, I did that, so it's there.
Oh, great, thank you.
The International Tribunal for Natural Justice has put down as many of the laws and the acts as they can for the United States. So hope that helps.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Okay, so how about we have Cynthia Tanner?
And then Kimberly, soon I would love to bring in Andrea so she can talk directly to the smart meter issue.
So Cynthia has a question about the gold, and then we'll bring in Andrea.
Yeah, hi, can you hear me?
Is that Bruce?
Yeah, it's Bruce. It's
okay, this is Bruce Tanner, Cynthia's husband.
And let's see if I can find the camera icon. Yeah, I'm not seeing my name on the piece. Oh, there it is. Okay. Okay, I clicked it.
Great.
Okay, just hold on a sec. Okay, there you go. Yeah, let's see. Hold on a second. So our first question is, how can we make the system reveal all of the aspects of itself that are currently occult and hidden? Everything is built, it's like a big house of mirrors.
Yeah.
When you go back to the Act of 1871 and all the things that followed that, and the possibility of a state of emergency declared during the Civil War that never was left, and then the state of emergency that was declared by Franklin Roosevelt on March 9th, 1933, with a proclamation, and this proclamation, I believe the number is Proclamation 2040, is scrubbed out of certain sets of documents for documenting what happened at that time. And yet the record of the proclamation exists, and it says that he says that this, the state of emergency that was declared by Proclamation 2039 is going to have to be extended into the future. and that it will only end when there is another proclamation issuing from, quote, the president. And there is no record of such a proclamation ever having been issued since that time. So if that's true, then the United States has been under a state of emergency ever since 1933. And all of this stuff is completely hidden, and there's no way of getting the system to admit what's going on, just as you can't get the private court system run by the Law Society to admit that it's operating under commerce. So if you can respond to all of that, thanks.
Cal, do you want to take that?
Yeah, I can take that. It comes to the point where you don't have to prove it. If you already know it, it's like the mafia. You know that they're involved in criminal activities, but you may not be able to prove it, but you know it's happening, right? So this is, you just got to kind of step out of trying to prove something and just act like it, and then they act a certain way because of your actions. So you're not going to find that stuff. They are purposely hiding it because they don't want anybody to know that there is no authority. Like, they just don't want you to know that. They don't want you to know that they're operating in commerce, because commerce is self-correcting once you understand it. And if everybody knows how it works, it will correct itself. Like, you can't take advantage if everybody's on the same playing field. So they just don't want you knowing certain things, and they want you to keep believing that there is a country. And I use the analogy of a bird called the Canada goose, and it flies from Canada down south to the United States, and it doesn't check in at the border. Well, for lots of them, they're not even aware that there's a border there.
Yeah.
And so if the birds don't know there's a border there, is there a border there? We've been told there is, and we believe it, but really we're on a planet inside of a solar system, inside of a galaxy that's inside of something else. And as has been said on this thing, these authority things are illusions, and we've bought into them hundreds of years ago. And then by convention, we just assume that everything's okay. Well, it's not. It's being run by actual criminals, and they are trying to hide their tracks. So you just take the system that as it is and use it against them, and you'll get, if enough people do this, we'll get huge results. I mean, I've seen some big results just by what I did by myself, right? So,
yeah, Bruce, I don't have a specific strategy for finding those documents. I wish that we could, but I agree with what Cal is saying. Is if we act as if they don't have this authority, and in fact they are personally and professionally liable when they do these transgressions, then they're going to know, even if they're not fully aware, they're going to start asking people in their profession more knowledgeable than themselves and finding out they're getting in big trouble. And there are other people who have been filing, you know, UCC disclosure documents. Again, people in major positions of power, and there have been associated with this, but associated with many other things as well, over 700 high-level banking and corporate CEO resignations around the world just in the last 2 years. They know that the House of Cards is crumbling with the internet, and how many people are aware it can't be stopped. So they're trying to grab the gold and run for the shadows. So I think as that happens, and as the old system crumbles, then the truth is going to start to come out, because just like with some of these smart meter people who are resigning, they are joining as whistleblowers to actually bring out the truth. There are internal emails from the head of the California PUC that were discovered in Freedom of Information, where he was saying to other people in the Public Utilities Commission, you know, I think these guys are right. There's actually, people are getting harmed by this stuff. There are fires and so forth. This is dangerous. So now he didn't take it all the way to, hey, we need to stop doing these. He said, you know, we need to keep this quiet. We need to not let this word out. But there he was acknowledging it.
Yeah, and I think one of the things I want to say as an activist in all of this, that the ones that we can take on, like smart meters and GMOs, where we can bond together, there are huge numbers of us already educated about that we don't want these things, and we can do it together with calls for their liability and accountability. We're not personally, like, we have the strength in numbers of doing this so that they understand that, you know, one of us isn't as vulnerable as because we have each other. So that's not to say that it doesn't take pioneering courage, as Andrea can testify to. So there are so many good questions coming up. What I'm going
to—I want to say one more thing before you go on to the question. Just while Bruce is there, and Bruce, if you could bring Cynthia in for a second too, I just want to introduce and acknowledge you to the network. Bruce and Cynthia have begun and continued to head up the Santa Cruz Thrive Meetup, and they've been doing fantastic work on all aspects of liberty, GMOs, and so forth. And they have recently started a local chemtrail initiative too. And Bruce and Cynthia, we think of you a lot, especially as we've been exploring these issues with Cal and Josh and others, because it's obviously very frustrating to take on a covert operation, which is taking place at 30,000 feet, not acknowledged by the government, not acknowledged by the pilots or whatever. But the chemtrails are one of the issues that I think is going to become very quickly addressable through exactly this sort of thing, because when we can name the harm that they are doing, name the various acts of harm that they will be liable for, and post a bond against them, and they know they're going to be liable, well, the pilots, the chemical companies, the airlines, the CIA, the shadow government, they're not going to want to take personal liability. So I think this is the quickest way to have a highly leveraged effect on things like this, GMOs and others. But anyway, I wanted to thank you specifically for your efforts, because what you're doing is representing what thousands of groups are doing all over the world on hundreds of issues.
Yeah.
So thanks.
To close out. So then our mission is not necessarily to get them to admit what's going on, but it's to get the population more and more to understand that they have recourse and redress.
Yeah, because I think, and to be educated, because one of the things in this notice of liability that they've been putting together for the smart meters is notice that they say, until you can prove, you know, this, 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 and this, then I'm not agreeing. You can't just be silent, because silence means you are agreeing. And so to be educated about what is it that we want them to prove explicitly about chemtrails in terms of safety before we will agree. So you don't even say, no, I don't agree. You go, okay, I'll agree to this after you can prove to me that there are four generations that have proven to have no ill effects, that there's no aluminum, that there, you know, and you put in all these things that you know that they can't prove as part of the agreement. So it's not just shifting, it's becoming educated, but it's also becoming educated explicitly. What is it about GMOs that we want to say, okay, as long as when you can prove this, 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 and this, and get really succinct and informed about that. So we have our homework to do, and it doesn't mean that traipsing through these documents isn't part of it. But one of the things that I've learned, and even I, like I've said to Foster, I feel, and the team knows, sometimes at the end of these days, I've just felt brain dead with looking at all these legal documents and trying to figure out what's really true. And I'm an activist. Like, I am ready. I'll go through a name. I'll figure out everything that I want those folks spraying chemtrails to have to answer. That's a really good use of me. Someone else is going to be better at figuring out, does this law case really say this, or, you know, we're looking at it. But I think to remember that there's some unique part of this that is each of ours to do, and to do that, and then to pool together. I mean, clearly Cal has a vast understanding of how the Bible interfaces with this history, and to be able to call upon it. It's like, thank you, you know, for adding that part, and then someone else adds their part. And so I just think it's important to realize we can use a hub here to take advantage of each person's passion and expertise.
I'm sure that many of you know the famous quote from Edmund Burke, where he says that in order for evil to flourish, all that's required is for good men to do nothing. And This takes on a whole new level of meaning when we understand this tacit agreement by which they're claiming to rule us. When we don't know what's going on, they take our silence as obedience.
So I'm going to ask for this to be really kept succinct with Andrea and then Chris E. And then Robert got his mic to work. Right. And so we'll go with that. And then, and like I said, we will be putting all of this on our site. And then Cal, before we move on, is there a place people can find this directly to you, or are you working through?
I mean, as far as the notice of liability?
No, just the information that you have and like a website or any of that kind of stuff.
No, I don't have a website. I've been pretty private up until now. So,
well, that ended today.
it ended a while ago.
But, yeah.
I think it's just been a timing thing for this information to come out when people were kind of ready for it. And I think it takes a period of time before you actually feel the injustice and that your understanding of how things you thought things worked isn't working. Then you start looking for something else, and then that's why it's popping up right now, right? Because I think people are hitting walls where they where, you know, supposedly we live in a free country and all these things, and we have a constitution like it, in the United States. And it doesn't seem to be working, right? So now people are looking, okay, what's going on? And that's why this is now popping up.
Great.
And Cal, if you want to send us a resource list that was valuable in your education that we could post along with these images, we can get that out to a large population without, you know, short of you having a website. And also, are you in a position where you are available to be hired to coach people who want to put this into practice in personal situations, or is that premature?
No, I've helped people. You have to be ready for it, but I can help, you know, certain people. I can't take on too much of personal stuff because you end up having to really take it. And so I have to be careful about that, but just because I have a life and children, et cetera, right? But I am available to ask questions, et cetera. I'm trying to help wherever I can, right? So
we really appreciate that. And we don't want you to be swamped, but if someone does want to contact you, what's the best way for them to find you?
Probably through the Take Back Your Power.
Okay.
Situation, and because most of that stuff is going to be online there, and
right,
like all those documents and the notice of liability will eventually, when it's ready, will be on there, and how to use it, all that kind of stuff. And then they're setting up like teams of coaching, as you know, as we can fund it, etc. And
that's perfect.
Yeah.
So is that takebackyourpower.org?
I believe it is. Yeah.
Okay. Great. All right. Okay. Andrea, are you available?
Yes, she's there.
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Perfect. Hi, how are you?
Great. Andrea is one of our major heroes. We haven't met her in person yet, but we've been following her saga in Michigan that we would love her to tell you about, because it's just been so inspiring to us. When we see somebody willing to take a stand for the truth and justice that they know, it just helps other people get off the couch and not think, you know, clicking a petition is going to handle it for changing this world. So please, Andrea, tell us what you've been going through.
Yeah, I know we have limited time, and today I'm actually on day 87. I've been living without electricity. So this whole saga, the corruption, I've actually been working directly with Cal and Josh through this entire ordeal here in the Detroit area, which I've been now coined the Rosa Parks of power, because I'm in Detroit and I'm living without power. But you know what? I'm not. I'm living without electricity. No one can take my power. I'm in good spirits, as you can see. It's been the coldest winter on record here. I was living off generators. I had two fail. One day it was 27 below zero. Another day it was 30 below zero. It has been the most challenging time in my life, but as with Cal, had to go to jail for 60 days to get through the torture they almost put you through, because they want you to believe that none of this is real, and they will challenge you, and they'll keep challenging you. And, you know, I'm tiny and mighty, and they just happened to come after the wrong girl. And the reason I was targeted was because I'm a leader in the movement here in Michigan, and I'm actually, you know, a health advocate and have clients all over the world. And I've been in the health movement for so long, it only made sense when I found out about what smart meters were doing and having my own health strong reason, figuring out that it was my smart meter. I just thought, oh, well, you know, you can rally in our capital here, Lansing. You can join on with all these other groups. And I realized that people have been fighting this since 2011 and no one had gotten anywhere. And I was really discouraged. And so I hosted Josh and Cal here in Detroit, and they decided to make our area one of the hubs. So they're doing this process in Seattle. They're doing the notice of liability up with Cal and his area in BC, and we're doing it here in Detroit. And we have around 30 people right now doing the process. And I'll tell you that there's some circumstantial, it's all speculative right now, but I have had some things happen where you go, you know, I had a judge run for me, a chief judge, as Cal mentioned, and this whole time Cal's been guiding me. So the only reason I went into their jurisdiction was because of I had a bunch of screen shares to show you guys, but for some reason I can't share my desktop, but I had all these documents to share with you guys. I went into the only reason I went into their judicial system is when corporations screw up, they screw up bad. And so when they cut my power from the poll, you guys, they didn't actually turn my power off. The head of the smart meter program right under the CEO was so upset that he, you know, when Cal mentions the process and how not everyone knows about it. So you have to understand that the Joe McCormick, the head guy here, started getting all this paperwork. And so he was supposed to shut my power off on November 20th. And all of a sudden he couldn't. He couldn't shut my power off. He didn't understand what was going on. And for some reason, he had to treat me differently. He was very upset about that. So they had this hearing inside their own tribunal, which was inside DTE, my utility company here. And I didn't show up. Why would I go walk into the trap, the belly of the beast? No way. So that about an hour after the hearing inside DTE ended, he drove to my house personally, climbed a utility pole, and caught my power. And the only reason they were able to do that was because my utility pole was in the neighbor's yard. There were police officers here. There was something that stopped them. And the only thing that would stop them from coming in my yard and not treating me like everybody else was I had already put them in this notice of liability. It saved me from November 20th till December 18th when Joe McCormick drove here and acted out of haste. So they caught my power from the pole. And since then, we've just been plugging along here. And I went into court in to have a sentence honored that said they're supposed to turn my power back on, and they won't honor that. So I'm still sitting here without power. And when I walked into the courtroom and I had someone with me who works for me, the judge got up and literally robe flying and fled. And we both looked at each other. We couldn't even believe it. I mean, her clerk, Karen, was like, I'll rise. I mean, I had that situation happen, and she hid in her chambers all day. She never came out. I was there to file an emergency motion for my power. She would not. She sent me on a wild goose chase. I experienced corruption. She gave me impossible tasks all day long. My story will be out soon. We've actually put film behind it, and we don't have time for that today. But what I've experienced has been torturous and so eye-opening. And like Cal said, you guys, you just have to put yourself in this and start to experience it, because I thought I had the veil lifted before, but it's not thinking outside the box, it's building a totally new one. And working directly with Cal, you just have to have faith. And Cal's already gone through this and he knows what works and what doesn't. And it's like our brains always want to try to figure it out. And when you start to get into the Rod Class stuff, and I think all of that's great, but I think we get pulled into wanting to have facts and to be able to prove things on paper. And some of this stuff is just by coincidence, things start to happen. For example, and I have these documents, there's two of the people, the libelees that we're sending to in this process. One of them has not taken the package ever. So we did some investigation and we actually had him process served to set precedence. You can't run from this. And I had these documents. He was refusing certified mail, which you can't do. So we had him process served the other day, and I have an affidavit, and he ended up having to take that. But do you know what his specialty is? We found out Mike Zimmer, who he's the acting director for everything in Michigan, is administrative law. So that's his specialty, and he refused. The other person who refused after the first round and wouldn't accept the notice of fault was our attorney general, which, you know, so the higher up you go, you'll find that these people know what this is.
Yeah.
It's the lower placeholders that, you know, that aren't really sure about this paperwork and want to challenge you on it. But again, they were treating me differently to the point of triggering a guy under a CEO to drive to my house to cut my power from the pole. Yeah. So day 87.
Yeah, thank you for this. And we will be posting about your story when you put it together, and really appreciate. I mean, I don't believe that everybody who engages in this is going to have to go through the same torturous experience. I think that some there will be safety in numbers on some of it, and some are going to take the lead in this. And so we really appreciate your leadership and willingness to create this new box and help articulate it for the rest of us. So I really, really appreciate you. And I think of you every time I'm warm. I send it to you. So thank you. And I'm going to call up, let's see, we have Robert and Chris E. both to ask quick questions here. And we are going to be posting all the resources, and we will continue to keep this event page updated with stuff. And with, as you, we're counting on you. As I said, this is a think tank. So as people make progress and have experiences, we want that to keep on being fed in here, because out of this, you know, more like Cal said, the time is ripe now for people to be educated. And I think, you know, more and more people are really questioning the basics of what we've been taught. So is it going to be Robert? Okay, Robert, you want to ask a concise question? Uh-oh.
Oh, shoot. I thought we had his microphone fixed, but it looks like it sounds like it's still not working.
Okay, I'm going to say, Chris? Let's go for Chris.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I'm on the phone line. I'm not. I don't have a camera, so I'm not on the computer. I just was wondering if Cal or if you, Esther, have heard anything about the OPPT, which is the One People's Public Trust UCC filings. They filed them in 2012, basically, that it was something where they several lawyers got together and they found a loophole in the UCC filings where they could foreclose basically on the banks and the government just by doing this filing. But I haven't heard too much other than the initial filing and everything happening back in 2012, but I haven't heard much since then. I was wondering if you were familiar with that.
Cal, are you familiar with the OPPT?
Yeah, it got sent to me when they were first starting that up, and I did read it, but I didn't participate, so I don't know any of the results. I got to be careful with this, but if you use a lawyer, you have they will take that as your agreement with the system. Put it that way. So you've shot yourself in the foot by going in with any of this kind of stuff. You have to represent yourself. So they won't say that, but that's just that will be the result. If you agree with this system in any way, then you can't say that you're not in agreement with it. And that's what they look for. And they use a lot of tricky stuff, which I won't get into. But once you understand that, you don't let them give them any of that stuff, to ammunition to use against you, they really have trouble dealing with you. So, in answer to that question, I really don't know what's happened with all that. And
I can say a little. I've had extensive conversations with Charlie Miller and with Heather. And with Susan Dea Hamwe, and followed to some degree their activities, not real recently, But I can say that I admire tremendously their courage and what they've done. They spent years researching this, particularly Charlie Miller, been searching this for over a decade, and really created the basis on which they filed these foreclosures against the Justice Department, against the Federal Reserve, against The Hague, against the Rothschild banking system. And you know, that takes a lot of guts to do that. I can't confirm what has or hasn't happened. I've been told by some people involved that they were that the people who were served were shocked, were scared to the point of offering them bribes to go away or to help them get out of this predicament. I don't think anything final has happened in terms of, I mean, I noticed that the Federal Reserve has stopped printing money on a monthly basis, at least overtly, but I can't necessarily connect these events. I think that these are the type of filings and foreclosures that are really helping drive this wave of resignations at the top of corporations, banks, and government. So I don't think that the OPPT itself is very active right now. The People's Public Trust 1776 is somewhat dormant because they did all of the filings, and they're struggling for funding to really continue to follow up on that, which I hope they get soon. I'd love to see all of these different people really being empowered because, you know, this process of transforming this situation back into one of justice is a messy one, just like, you know, the civil rights movement or women's suffrage. It takes, you know, it takes a Martin Luther King, it takes a Malcolm X and a Rosa Parks and, you know, millions of other people all doing their individual part. So I don't have any more of an update than to say they are very welcome allies out there and admire what they're doing.
So I'm going to go for Robert Quinn to come on up, and then David Wilson.
Hello?
Yes, you're on.
Hi.
Hi, Robert. Welcome.
Hi. I was wanting to ask about the New Republic of Kenyatta. And I don't know if you know of Kevin Annette and what he's gone through with the genocide of the native kids in the church schools. And maybe Cal has something on that.
And also your question had to do with the Queen at that time in a...
Well, also, yeah, the Hague, the International Common Law Court in The Hague, a couple of years ago, I think now it's over a year, convicted the Queen of abduction of native children from Canada. And so that would actually, you know, kill her authority because she's a convicted felon. I mean, convicted felon.
She doesn't have the authority anyway, I guess, but.
yeah.
Cal, do you have any knowledge about that? And then, yeah.
I'm aware of Kevin Annette. I've been on a couple of events with him in the early days, and I'm aware of the genocide. I'm aware of the, when I was younger, they had these residential schools and there was a lot of atrocities there. And so that all that stuff is true. I do know that when he did convict the Queen and the Pope stepped down and the Queen got sick for the first time in her life and was hiding in a hospital. She since resurfaced, but there was a knee-jerk reaction. So all these things, I think they realized that the game is up and the House of Cards is coming apart, and it, as elaborate as it is, it's very fragile, and they're quite afraid of what's happening on many fronts. So Kevin Annette has done some amazing things. He's been through the fire too. He's been beaten up by the police and all kinds of things, and he's lost his family, his job as a pastor. Many things happened to Kevin Annette, and he's a pioneer.
I'd like to add in also that I've been following Kevin's work for many years and have tremendous admiration for what he's done. He's establishing these independent juries and, you know, grand juries. And of course, that doesn't jive with the traditional law that they want you to accept. So, it, you know, it's just in the process of of gaining traction. I know that Alfred Lambermann Weber and some others have come out recently claiming that that Kevin is a fraud. I haven't seen any evidence of that.
Oops. Is Foster's frozen to everybody?
Yeah.
See, those claims aren't true and haven't held up, and so I'm waiting to see. And meanwhile, I love what Kevin is trying to do, because it's one of the issues that we are most concerned about, is this child abuse and satanic rituals and child trafficking all over the world. It's huge and has been hidden by the same powers that be, and also used to blackmail high-level members of the judiciary, the government, law enforcement, and so forth, to keep these other big secrets hidden. So, keep an open mind, and when you find the work of people like this, if you can support them and believe in them, please do.
Yes.
So we're going to go for David Wilson, and I do want to share a vision that I think is really important, because there's a lot about this whole process that is deeply personal and actually involves a lot more than information that we gain access to. And I want to speak to that a little bit. So, David?
Are you able to hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Just to my question, if, say, you were drawn into a quote-unquote law proceedings, having a lawyer present just for a cipher, but you declare that you represent yourself, would that circumvent them realizing or conditioning you into their realm?
Well, each case is different, and each judge is going to be different, and it all depends on you, really, and your belief system, and how you conduct yourself. I know they look for anything, any kind of agreement, because then they can act in a certain way, because as if you have agreed to this offer of a case. So one of the main ones is to be represented by a lawyer. They will assume you can't take care of your own affairs, and they will act accordingly as if you have agreed to the whole system. So if you know how to go in with a lawyer, and you have strong paperwork and a strong belief system, that this is not, that you're not agreeing, and you make it very clear, expressed in writing and verbally, then you can get rid of those type of tacit agreements. But don't just go in there with a lawyer, because they're going to make assumptions, and that's what kills you, and you don't even know that it's killed you.
I think we need a new term for someone with expertise who goes in as a companion and protector to give advice, but where we get out of this tacit agreement that means you're buying into the legal system.
The sovereignty advocate, I think we could have something like that. Goa, how about, would you pull that image on the screen? I love this. I know this conversation could truly go on for hours. There's a lot to unpack. And as I said, I think a lot of, and Andre has been a good teacher about this, reminding me, and also just in our work at Thrive, is that, shifting our belief system is really at the heart of the matter here, because recognizing authority comes from our beliefs about why anyone would or should have that over us. So I do want to encourage you all just to take a moment and close your eyes or focus on the image that Goa has created for us up on the screen. While I just share a vision of true accountability, beginning with ourselves, to help ignite and nurture a balanced blend of inner and outer clarity. Imagine internally we know ourselves, and we each attune to our own unique purpose. And from that knowing, we have complete surety that no one has the right to coerce us so long as we're doing no harm. Imagine that we know as an unwavering truth that our intentional life on this planet is as meaningful as every other person's, So when someone, out of ignorance, habit, or aggression, attempts to impose their falsely claimed power over us, we greet them with steadfast clarity and courage, letting them know that they are mistaken as to who we are and who they are in relation to us. Recognizing that this acknowledgement of our glorious, powerful, sovereign selves takes unlearning, practice, and courage, we deliberately create networks of support, a buddy system we can turn to for strength, comfort, and reminding of why it is so important that we don't that we do not violate this knowing of ourselves. Imagine we bring this inner clarity and network of aligned people to every place that someone's imposition of power over us is visible. Imagine that instead of asking for permission to drink clean water, eat healthy food, breathe clean air, and nurture harmonious relations with all species of all life, we each find the one part of this inevitable transformation that is ours to fulfill, and we commit to it. Like we commit to protecting a baby from an approaching dangerous predator with instinctual knowing that it is simply the right thing to do. Imagine we call upon this same fierce knowing to protect our own fragile planet and take this temporary opportunity that is our life to live out what we have come to do. Imagine we tap into this clarity when Monsanto raises its many tentacled head and claims the right to poison our food, or our utility company claims the right to install a harmful surveillance device in our homes. Imagine we respond with absolute confidence that they must be mistaken, like a cosmic wrong number, when they call expecting us to be willing recipients of their misguided plan. We respond saying, "Oh, you must have the wrong number. In fact, that number no longer exists. I don't recognize the authority you seem to think you have over me. And in fact, I'm certain you're mistaken about the very concept. Here's a number you can call to get some help to understand the way we operate here. It's the Sovereignty Hotline, with counselors equipped to help you find the rightful role for you to play in the transformation of the world that is now unfolding, where you will have an opportunity to help heal that which you have harmed and join the rest of us as we continue to unlearn our misconceptions and blossom into the creative, healthy, innovative, ingenious divine beings that we came here to be." So thank you,
thank you, Kimberly. Wow, very beautiful.
I think it really matters to hold that, and this buddy system is no joke. So let's use the hub of your own networks or what we can provide through thrivemovement.com, where we'll put all of this and continue to add things so that we can all really have each other to rely upon as we navigate these new territories.
You know, obviously 2 hours is just the barest beginning of all of this, but just know that we hold it as that. And this conversation touches into all the other conversations of Thrive, and we will be having events on EMF violations, on health violations, on the principles of liberty in general. So one of the most excruciating parts to this for us is not having everybody be able to have time to come on with their insights and with their questions, but that's simply the limitations of the technology and people's busy lives right now. But know you are really valued as a part of this conversation, and we pay attention to every comment that comes in on the Thrive Together website under each event, so the conversation continues there. And I especially want to thank Cal and Andrea and Josh and Rebecca, unfortunately, wasn't able to get on, but all of you who are active in bringing these principles in and being courageous enough to take the stand for what you know to be true and educate the rest of us as to how to join in and reclaim the truth of our being. know, one of my favorite philosophers, Stefan Molyneux, said it very beautifully. He said, it's not just the abuse of power that is the problem. It's the power to abuse. And this is what we're doing. We're peeling back the wizard's curtain that he's hiding behind and showing that no one rightfully has the power to abuse and dominate others. So please stay in the conversation. Let your friends know to join in with us. And unfortunately, we're going to need to end it for today so people can get on with their schedules.
And we have another one, April 18th. We forgot to mention we'll be having our next Thrive Together event. And we really hope that you will all join in with us there and continue in the important think tank that is this network. So,
you want to describe what that event's going to be?
No. I can't think of it right now.
I'd be happy to just mention it. People are asking us all the time, where do you guys get your news?
Oh, yeah.
And so we're going to have an event on that, and we're going to share where we get our news, but even more importantly, how we process that news to try to find out what's true and what's of value to empower solutions. And we're going to invite you all to do the same and refine our process and add resources and really talk about the process of finding out through technology and through networks as best we can what's going on and then collaborating on effective solutions. So that will be on Saturday, April 18th.
At 2 o'clock, that'll be at 2 because we know we have some people from various places around the world participating. That time will be a little better for them, and we'll keep you posted on that. And we are going to do our unmuting and take a minute to just be able to hear the hundreds of voices that are here to get a feel for it because everyone's muted this whole time. So thank you all.
Yep. Yeah, we'll leave it open for a minute so that people have a chance to just hear one another before we close the audio window.
All right, here we go.
Thank you, Kimberly. Thank you, Foster.
So, thank you very much, Foster.
Love you.
Thank you, Gal.
Thank you.
Thank you for the wonderful news.
Thank you, Foster.
Thank you.
That's
wonderful. Thank you, Foster. Kimberly, thank you so much for what you did.
Thank you.
Come and thank
we really
you.
Appreciate Connect this. This heart. Is life changing. Thank you very much.
Lightning.
So much faster.
Do that thing as a separate video to post.
Much from Randy in Colombia.
Hi, Randy.
Thank you, Kimberly and Foster. Thank you very much.
Welcome. Hey, Rosie.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Gila. And Foster yes. And everybody else.
Right. Philip and Al.
Thank you, Foster and Kimberly, for everything and everyone.
Thank you, Foster and Kimberly.
Thanks so much. Puts it all really, I appreciate this.
Thank you, everyone. We're going to need to close the window now. We'll see you next month.
Thank you so much, Cal. Just dearly appreciate it.
I think Cal's muted. There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Yeah, Cal, you did a fantastic job. I can only imagine what it was like to try to squeeze that all down into that first half hour, but it was still very calm and relaxed. You touched the key points. It was very inspiring.
Good.
Yes, thank you very much. So I guess people at Take Back Your Power are going to get some email.
Yeah, you could get absolutely deluged. So it may be your next challenge as to how you want to handle it. And I just encourage you to be careful with your time and also be honoring of yourself with your compensation. because you're a tremendously valuable resource in the world right now. And if people want your time individually, then you should be compensated for all the time that you've put in the past and the risks that you've taken and your wealth of knowledge. So I encourage you just to discover how you want to set that up in such a way that it, you know, doesn't throw things out of balance for you and does really nurture your life.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we'll be allies with you ongoingly here.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And thanks to whoever set you up in that beautiful studio. The lighting was great. The background's great.
That's Clint. Hello.
Thank you. Clint, thank you. That worked out great.
Great job, Clint.
Sorry about the PDF. We the little stick drive wasn't pushed in far enough. So.
Oh, wow. No problem.
No worries.
Thanks for your help with that.
All right. Goodbye, everyone. We'll be in touch.
Okay. Yeah. See you later.
Bye. Cheers.